Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
We're here in front of a live audience for Science Week 2024. It's with thanks to Research Ireland. Check out scienceweek.ie. So we've talked about the real world, but what about regeneration in the virtual world? Where did the idea of lives come from? And why are avatars so popular as a game device? Well, we're delighted to be joined by Peter Lynch. He's a lecturer in computer games in TU Dublin. He's worked for Activision and Blizzard and some really big game houses, so we're delighted to have him. And Afra Kerr, Professor of Information and Communication Studies and a Senior Advisor at the UCD Centre for Digital Policy. She's been studying video games and what happens to people when they play them. Please welcome them to the stage. Peter, maybe we might start off with you, we're talking about regeneration. So this idea of lives, you know, that you play a game and you have a life and you expend a certain amount of lives during a game. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I actually had to think about this because I'm a game designer as well, and you take it for granted. So basically, when you think about lives in video games, it's a term we use for actually playing a turn in a game, right? It's not an actual life. And where it came from was in the early days of, which I played in the arcades, Pac-Man and Space Invaders, you put in your 10p and you get 3 lives. That's the way they came from. And the idea being that 3 lives or 3 goals or 3 turns was just enough to get you hooked. So you'd have one goal where you get used to the game, another goal where you kind of get a bit better. And as games developed, games had 3 lives. And so, but what occurred really was with home consoles, you bought the game. So it kind of became redundant. And what really occurred was technology changed as well. So you went from really primitive arcade machines to 8-bit consoles to 16-bit, 32-bit. So what effectively occurred was when you played a game, your condition or when you died or your health decreased, it was saved. So save games effectively meant lives have kind of become, if people think about any gamers here, the game over screen used to get over or, you know, it doesn't really occur anymore. So, you know, but there's an interesting kind of backlash to that. But essentially lives in games now with checkpoints and save games, you just stay in the game. You know, you've one life, you're there. It's hard to kill you in a game nowadays.
Yeah, it is.
Completely kill you.
It's regeneration, right?
Yeah.
Are there different types of personalities that play video games, and how do we classify those?
So I was going to say, do we have any in the audience here? How many people have played a video game out of curiosity?
Not going to see is my yeah.
So rough. I'd say 60%, 70%.
Yeah, 70. Yeah.
Candy Crush counts.
Yeah,
video
Candy
game?
Crush counts. Yeah. Yes.
Amstrad 64 a game.
Do you play Candy Crush?
No.
No, I didn't think so. Yeah.
Well, you've hit the classic thing when I do ask people, do you play games? And they go, no. And then you say, do you play Candy Crush? Yeah. But, you know, I'm not a gamer. I don't play games. So effectively, there was research done. And even though it's done in 1996 by Richard Bartle, and he came up with a taxonomy for defining player types. So there's 4 types. And so you have killers. I'll explain what they are. And it sounds terrible. Killers, achievers, socializers, and explorers. So I'm a killer. I know it sounds terrible. I'm not. So what it means is it's competitive play, right? And then you have achievers, so getting a badge or an award, really important. Socializers, not surprisingly, they want to meet other people. And then explorers would be exactly discovery. So this was done, Bartle's taxonomy of player types was done in 1996, and it was done in the kind of role-playing games. But it's still relevant now. We still kind of, it's become more nuanced. You're a gamer.
I'm a killer.
There you go.
I'm a killer.
Are there any gamers that don't define as killers that you meet?
Do we have? Yeah. So we probably
yeah,
we
did. A good few over there. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, hanging out at the fringes, because if you were in the middle, you get shot.
We would kill you. No.
So Afra, you look at what happens when people play these games and what happens to them and what might happen to society. Tell me a little bit about your research.
Okay, yeah. I guess because I'm interested in the humans and then the human-technology relationship, I've been studying game players, then people who make the games, and then also what might be some of the social implications of this. So actually, there's a lot of research where people are actually literally studying game players while they play, like physiologically tracking the impacts on their body and everything. And that's usually in lab situations. I'm usually interested in when they go to play them in their sitting rooms or their bedrooms. When I started studying gameplay, everybody would be bringing their consoles under their arm to their friend's house to have like and set up a kind of networked gameplay session. Mm. Now they just plug into their internet and play remotely across the devices, you know. And so the thing that was always really fascinating to me was that the stereotypes, once you start to study games, completely fall apart. Right. So when I started to do this, I stupidly sent out a survey and I said, I'm looking for gamers to talk to gamers. And then I was doing it on female gamers. And nobody was answering my surveys and wanted to talk because people didn't want to say they were a gamer. Mm. But then, like this discussion, I said, well, have you ever played, I don't know, Snake on your phone? Or have you ever, you know, do you do puzzle games on something? And they went, yeah.
Oh, I do them.
You see? So we have this strange, like, sociological stereotype, particularly here in the West, as to what is a gamer. And they sit in a room and they play on their own and they're in the dark and they have the big chair and they have all of these things. But actually, that's just a small percentage of people who play games. And if you look at
and there
the
is something
range
wrong with them.
Of
I'm just joking. I'm just kidding.
Well, they entertain, like they get a lot of pleasure out of playing these games. They're often playing them with lots of people from all over the world.
No, I include myself in those. I am being facetious.
The problem is if you just look at it, it looks completely in isolation, one person. But then actually when you either are in the game with them and you talk to them about that experience, they will say, well, actually, I'm a healer in a killing game. So I'm the person who goes in to heal people to make sure that we can go on and play further, right? And then you have the other people who are playing like together and they meet up at a certain time and come together. And then you have people in maybe in China and other countries, in the Philippines, who are gold farmers who are doing the grind for you and then selling items to people in the rest who don't have time to do the grinding. So there's all of these really interesting kinds of social spaces growing up around them. So I'm kind of interested in all of that thing and how we can break down the stereotypes of who plays games.
I mean, from the research that you're looking at, I don't want to go down that, you know, are video games bad for you, because I think it's covered everywhere else. But in the games you're looking at, do you see behaviors in how people play games match how people define themselves? There's this great game called DayZ, I think it is. And it's a game in which you get one life. So you play this game and you can't regenerate, and you might play it for months, but if you die, you're dead and you have to start all over again.
Parents also do this by plugging out devices on their teenagers.
Exactly, yeah. But do we learn anything about the sort of people that are playing these games when we look at games like that?
I mean, it's fascinating. The designers thought, we'll take something that's kind of fundamental to games and we'll just decide not to do it. We'll sell a game and see, can we sell a game that's completely different? Mm. And I hope the people who bought it knew that in advance, or they'd be really annoyed if they found out they couldn't do it. You know, if you look at game studies theory, they will often say the key thing about most games, not that one, is that you can fail safely. Mm. You can play, fail, and go back and try again. And like, there's not so many places in everyday life where you're afforded that luxury almost to try out something, right?
Yeah.
And whether it is playing a first-person shooter, or whether it's an adventure game, or whether it's a puzzle game, like you just get really frustrated and you go, but I'm going to keep doing it, right? Because I like either the challenge or I like the competition, or there's some element in your life. Mm. So what's fascinating to me about games is they're so creative. The people who design them are so creative, and they can offer many different things to people. So depending on your personality, or depending on whether you've had a really tough week in work and you want to have a relaxing game, or you're up for doing something really competitive. The thing to me that was always a problem with Bartles was that it presumed that everybody was just wanted one thing from their game playing.
Yeah.
When you interview people, they'll say, well, I had a tough night. I was out late on Saturday night, so I just want a kind of relaxing game to play on Sunday, right? And then other people are saying, no, I'm getting ready. I'm going out. Like when you put on different types of music and you might play a different type of game.
Yeah.
So I like to break down those a little bit, yeah.
One of the things that's a huge feature now of regenerating a game, keeping a game fresh and getting people to play it over and over again is this idea of building avatars. And I'm wondering, what is the thinking behind building an avatar and why are they useful in video games?
Yeah, I mean, they're really useful for a number of reasons. Just one thing with DayZ, and I was just going to mention it, it's kind of a throwback to the early Space Invaders. Anybody who's played these games, go back. They were really hard, right? So there's a new genre of games called roguelike, which is you've one life, and exactly if you die, you start at the beginning. But the holy grail with DayZ, and it kind of ties into NPCs, is an area we call emergent gameplay. So basically, games have become very system designed from a systems point of view. So you have a combat system, an economy system, an inventory system. And basically, the idea with emergent gameplay is we design the game, particularly survival games like DayZ or Rust, where there isn't really a purpose. It's just to survive. But you can do other things as a game designer that I hadn't intended. So people started building in DayZ. You can build a house, whatever, to protect things. They start building multiple houses or forts. Now, we hadn't planned that.
Were they leasing them out, you know?
well, they try to, and then you'd the whole thing was, I got to figure out a way to destroy your fort using something else in the game that wasn't planned. So it's kind of the holy grail, because it leads into this thing that, you know, the classic thing I say as a game designer, anybody who knows play a game, when I design a game, and I start in a room like this, right? Gamers, and if you watch them, the very first thing, I designed the game, there's the door. What do? They turn around, and what's behind me? And can I go this way? So it's, when you're designing a game, you've got to factor that in. NPCs, non-player characters, and avatars, the big issue is most games now, a lot of games now, are online multiplayer, right? So I design a game, and I launch it tomorrow, and two people join, and then nobody's going to play the game, or 100 people.
There's not enough people in the world for it to be entertaining.
So what we do is the NPCs are these virtual characters. They have two purposes. One is to make it interesting for people who maybe if it's a single player game, find it, you know, it's interesting to do. But then if it's an online game and there aren't enough players in there, or a lot of games will be competitive where it's the game I play, World of Tanks, it might be 30 versus
World
30.
Of Tanks.
World of Tanks.
That sounds amazing.
It is. It is.
I'm sorry. I know that is a real small boy. I want to play World of Tanks.
I know. I stopped playing games, and I have a big interest in history, and it's really accurate on it. I'm not pushing the game now, but and I have no affiliation with it, but I played it. And so it's 30 versus 30 tanks, right?
Yes!
Right? 30 versus, and they've all mixture, right? So, and the whole thing is, if I drop out of the game, it's 29, so or 10 people drop out. So the AI, and this is where games have had AI for a long time, even though the term is used. So the game would automatically generate based on my play style to go in and keep the game going.
Yeah.
And the ultimate...
It would copy your play style?
Yeah. It's very...
Do they use this for actual tanks, by the way? This and kind of copy the play style of a combatant?
It is, yes. Yeah. Because it is arcadey, there is, they've had to, but actually... things, and what it does is it means you can keep adding to your tank, and trust me, I've been doing this, and it's never finished. You kind of go, but I've done there's this extra little thing I can add. But so very much the AI has been used in the game for a long time, so people haven't realized it has been used, and it's very much when you join a game, one interesting challenge for us down the line is, are these real or are they virtual? I'm even struggling now to know.
And we look at the future of gaming, it will surely include conversations with characters where you could talk for hours and they would never repeat the same thing. And they could take you down really, really interesting places. It could just be you and this one character talking for hours and they would never repeat themselves, which leads me in a way to think about, you know, what games might look like in the future. But regeneration is certainly something we'll see. My children are now playing video games to continue on the theme of regeneration. And I wish they weren't killers, but they were. And they often don't take it well when they end up being at the end of a killer through the internet. Thank you so much to Peter and Afra.
Future-proof extra.
With Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
On News Talk.